This is WSFI Spotlight, a conversation with Catholics living in the light.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of WSFI Spotlight. I'm your host, Bill Snyder, and on this very special episode, my guest here today is John Salza. John is a cradle Catholic, and in law school, he was recruited to join the Masons. He is a practicing lawyer in Milwaukee, and he is also a Catholic apologist and author. He has written several books, two of which are Why Catholics Cannot Be Masons and Masonry Unmasked. His website is johnsalza.com. John, thank you so much for joining me here today.
My pleasure, Bill. Thank you for having me.
So, John, I want to ask you right off the bat about your personal journey of faith and your entrance into the Masons. How did this come about?
Yeah, as you said, Bill, I'm a cradle Catholic, and I grew up having a very strong relationship with God, with the Catholic faith. I had a pretty good formation, St. Catherine's of Alexandria and Brown Deer, and then I went on to Dominican High School. So I had 12 years of Catholic education, Mass, Rosary, Confession, Stations of the Cross. I mean, I had a good foundation. Through college and then into law school, I began being recruited, believe it or not, by Catholic men who were Freemasons. And I didn't know much about Freemasonry at all. I knew that they were distinguished by the square and compasses on their temples, as they called them, but that was about it. And when I finally graduated from law school, and Masons want a healthy Catholic representation in their ranks. This is one of their objectives, because they want to deceive the public that this is really a good organization. And plus, being an attorney with some stature, they like people like that in the group. So I was approached again by Catholic men out of law school about joining Freemasonry. And I said, what is it about? And they gave me tracts on Freemasonry that shows how many presidents were Masons. These are the lawyers and the judges in town that are Freemasons. And the theme was, hey, this is the most ancient and honorable fraternity in the world, designed to make a good man a better man. And all you have to do is believe in God, and that's it. And that makes you eligible to become a Freemason. Well, that sounds okay. And that doesn't sound like anything nefarious is going on there. But as a Catholic, I still had an inkling that maybe the church had somehow spoken on this matter. And I called my parish priest about it. And he said, you know, the church had spoken negatively in the past, but really today there's a different view. As long as you recognize the distinction between the church and the lodge, it's okay. Now, that's the advice I got. The priest was in good faith. He admitted to me he hadn't studied the matter, and that was really all the research I did. Okay, so I went into Freemasonry, and it was actually in the rituals themselves, learning about the organization, that I discovered that this truly was a religion. It's an anti-Catholic religion, and then began looking at what the popes had said about it in their encyclicals and documents and so forth, and that finally, by God's grace, drew me out of the lodge.
So what is so dangerous, spiritually dangerous, about the Masons? Can you talk about some of those rites and rituals and the dangers of it?
Well, the danger is that Freemasonry leads men away from Jesus Christ and the Catholic Church. That's the bottom line. Freemasonry is a religion, and it's not me saying this. The popes have all said this. In my works, I've discovered over a dozen popes. I've discovered about 24 papal condemnations on Freemasonry, and they all say the same thing. They say that Freemasonry is a religion of naturalism. And that means that it rejects the revealed truth that God has given ultimately in the Son, Jesus Christ, through the church. So Masonry believes that one can know truth only through their senses, by what is perceived by the senses, through nature, through reason. It rejects all supernatural revelation, okay, as, you know, as non-essential, as an opinion only. It's not dogmatic. And that's where the church says, wait a minute, of course we can know God through our senses, through nature, through reason, but God has given us a supernatural revelation that we are obligated to assent to in faith, in supernatural faith. And so that is the inherent conflict between Freemasonry and the faith that our Lord gave us, the Catholic faith.
Why is it such an evil in the world?
Well, again, I'm focusing on the supernatural now. God sent his Son to save us from the fires of hell. He shed his blood on the cross to save us from our sins. And so anything that's going to lead man away from salvation, that is the worst possible danger you can have. And we can talk about the material level and all the evils that Masons have done throughout the world, through their promotion of indifferentism, through their promotion of communism and all these other things. But ultimately, even though the church recognizes all those things on the material level, it's the spiritual level that's most important, because we're dealing with the salvation of souls. And so Freemasonry has set itself up as a religion directly opposed to the religion of Jesus Christ. And it does this in many ways. You can go downtown here in Milwaukee, you know where the Scottish Rite building is? They built that building right next to the cathedral, St. John's Cathedral. And if you go throughout the country, you will often find that the Masons, the Grand Lodges, or the Scottish Rite buildings are built strategically next to the diocesan cathedrals. Why do they do that? Because they're making a statement. We are at war with the Catholic faith in Jesus Christ. That's why it's a spiritual danger.
Okay, so now can you walk us through some of the particulars of the rites and rituals?
Certainly. I can talk right about the first time you're inducted into Freemasonry. Now, remember I said that they recruit you on the basis of this is an ancient and honorable fraternity, and we want to join. You want you to join so that you can become a good man, better husband and father, and so forth. When you get there, it's interesting. And let me talk first about the process, because this is important. There is an extensive recruiting process that takes place even before you get to the lodge. You have to be unanimously accepted into Freemasonry. And so you are recruited, but you're actually required to ask. There's a bumper sticker on the cars that say to be one, ask one. Okay, that's for the Masons, you have to ask. But it's ironic that they're the ones that are actually asking you. You're not asking them. Okay. So that's the first lie of Freemasonry. They say, we don't recruit, and yet they do recruit. And in fact, when I was in the Masons, they were giving financial incentives to recruit as many members as possible. So that's lie number one. The recruiting process is quite extensive. They have Masons come to your place of business, your work, your home, at least three separate times. And they ask you a lot of questions about what do you know about Freemasonry? Does your family know anything about Freemasonry? They want to know if there's any internal opposition because they don't want any trouble. They basically want to confirm that you're ignorant about what Masonry is. They also tell you at every meeting, by the way, you have to believe in God, but we don't discuss God in the lodge room. They say that repeatedly. We do not discuss God in the lodge room. Now, I wondered why they were making that disclaimer. You're a fraternity, so why would I expect you to discuss God in the lodge room? Why do you think they say that? They say that to condition you. The conditioning starts already in the recruitment process, that once you get into the lodge, when you hear God being discussed in the lodge room, you're going to hearken back to those representations and say, hey, wait a minute, the brothers told me that God's really not being discussed, so I guess this isn't about God or religion. So that's why they do that. So it's amazing how they've set up this structure, but they start conditioning you right away in recruitment that this isn't about God, and yet all of Freemasonry rituals are about God, their God, the God of Freemasonry. After you go through the interview process, I had to appear before a master's board, which was about a dozen Masons, and there was more interview going on at the lodge. And then finally, they call you a month later and say you've been unanimously accepted. You have to be unanimously accepted to become a member. And so they'll issue you a summons, and you appear for your first degree. And the first degree is called the Entered Apprentice Degree. And here is where the ritual starts in earnest. You get to the lodge, and again, remember, you have no idea what to expect. Back then, this is 20 years ago for me now, so they didn't have internet where I could look at what's going on with the rituals. I didn't know anything about this. And you have friends and family, many people waiting in the lodge room. They take you back, and they strip you down, other than your undergarments. And they put you in a very vulnerable position. Now, you're thinking to yourself, why are they doing this? But this is a fraternity, so I guess this is kind of what fraternities do. This is maybe fun and games. But it isn't fun and games because they tell you not just to take off your clothes. They tell you to take off your wedding ring. They tell you to take off your scapular and your crucifix. They divest you of everything. And talk about being put on the spot and not prepared, okay? After 3 months of recruitment and this and that, you're in this situation and you invariably say yes, even though you don't want to say yes. And that was the case with me. You ask why. Why am I required to do this? And they basically say, we'll explain everything to you in the lodge. So you're put in that kind of pressure situation.
Okay. And then what happens?
After you agree to be divested of everything you have, you're blindfolded. Okay, talk about vulnerability. You're blindfolded and a noose is placed around your neck. Now, this happens with every single Mason who's been inducted into Freemasonry. What I'm describing is what happens throughout the world. It's a universal ritual. So you're effectively naked, you're blindfolded with a noose around your neck, and you are escorted to the lodge door, you know, by somebody who's conducting you, your conductor. You can't see anything, okay? All you can do is hear. And they ask you to knock on the door three times, okay? So you knock three times, and you hear a voice saying, who comes there? And then you hear your conductor responding for you. And he said, this is Mr. John Salza, who has long been in darkness and now seeks to be brought to light. And he goes on to say, to receive a rite and the parts and benefits of this worshipful lodge. And then you hear, erected to God and dedicated to the holy saints, John. So I'm thinking to myself, interesting. Saints John, yeah, St. John the Baptist is my patron saint. This sounds okay. This sounds Catholic to me, right? Of course it isn't.
Right.
They're doing this to deceive you. But what's really interesting is they say that the candidate's long been in darkness. Now, what does that mean? I've only had a blindfold on for a couple minutes, but this guy's telling me I'm long in darkness. Well, it means that you are uninitiated. You are still in the darkness of your own religion, your Catholic faith. You haven't been illuminated into the religion of Freemasonry. And so Masons view all non-Masons as what they call profanes. Even if you're baptized in the light of Jesus Christ, a member of his church, to Freemasonry, you're in a state of darkness until you're initiated into the lodge.
Wow, this is an incredible conversation. For those of you listening at home, we're talking with John Salza. He is a former Mason and Catholic apologist and author. We're talking about his personal journey into Freemasonry and his journey of faith. We want to take a short break here on WSFI Catholic Radio and WSFI Spotlight. We do have a small studio audience with us. We will take questions after the break, so stay tuned.
Hello, I'm Scott Hahn from Franciscan University of Steubenville in Ohio. Catholic radio is essential for the new evangelization. It reaches people who are not necessarily going to darken the doorways of a local parish, but they'll be driving by, and you can recommend it. You can even turn it on when you got a passenger in the car. Catholic radio deserves your support as well. Not only your prayer support, but also your financial aid. So I encourage you all, get involved and spread the word. God bless you.
WSFI is committed to bringing quality Catholic programs to our local community, but we only can do that with your financial help. Please take a moment now to donate online at WSFIradio.org or mail your tax-deductible donation to WSFI Catholic Radio, P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois, 60048. That's P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois, 60048. Donations of any amount are greatly appreciated.
Are you retired or near retirement? Do you want to keep a larger amount of your assets in a safe place with guaranteed interest rates to protect yourself from a huge market swing? Are you amazed at how low the interest rates are at your bank? If you said yes to any or all of those questions, you may want to call me, Matt Tomlinson, at Catholic Financial Life to discuss our guaranteed fixed rate annuities. Call 847-548-MATT, 847-548-6288. Products not available in all states.
The Holy Family Catholic Bookstore is blessed with the opportunity to participate with WSFI Catholic Radio in the new evangelization. Holy Family is your local resource for books, CDs, and DVDs from Catholic Answers, Ignatius Press, and all of the other fine publishers featured on Catholic Radio. Holy Family also has the area's largest selection of baptism, communion, and confirmation gifts. Holy Family Catholic Bookstore is located at 9249 Old Green Bay Road, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. More information is available on Facebook.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this episode of WSFI Spotlight. Today, my guest is John Salza. I'm Bill Snyder. We're talking about John's incredible journey into the Masons. He is a former Mason. He is now a Catholic apologist and author. He has authored two books on the Masons, Why Catholics Cannot Be Masons, and Masonry Unmasked. The website is johnsalza.com for more information about him. But John, I want you to continue the story before we get to audience participation and questions here, just about the ritual. You left us off right standing naked, basically, with a noose around your neck before this group of people. So yes. I'll let you continue the story.
And remember, every single Mason goes through what I'm describing. This is the entered apprentice degree. So after you knock on the door, there's a favorable report received. You're escorted into the lodge for the first time. Again, you can't see anything. And immediately, you are received on the point of a sharp instrument piercing your naked left breast. And you are told that as this is an instrument of torture to your flesh, so should the recollection of it be to your conscience, should you ever presume to reveal the secrets of Freemasonry unlawfully. I'm quoting from the ritual. That stuff is still in my mind, what they said to me. You are received. It's a spear or a knife, and it sets the tone immediately. It tells you this really isn't a fraternity. This is more than that. This is something serious. And if you would ever disclose these secrets, you're in danger. Your life's in danger. So they're setting the tone. It's an intimidation tactic, really, is what it is. After that happens, you are asked to kneel down and attend prayer. And you hear who is called the worshipful master. He's the leader of the lodge, the one that's really the head officer of the lodge. He says, you're going to kneel in prayer because no Mason engages in any great or important undertaking without first invoking, and I'm quoting, first invoking the blessing of deity. Now, this is the first time you hear God referred to as deity, and immediately as a Catholic, it strikes you. That's not how we refer to God. Anyway, they say a prayer together. And after the prayer, all the Masons respond, so mote it be. This is how they end their prayers, and it's a resounding. If there's 50 or 100 men in that lodge room, you hear, so mote it be. And it's very intimidating. And at this point, then, it's silent, and the worshipful master places his left hand on your head. You're kneeling down, blindfolded, and he places his left hand on your head, and he says this. He said, in whom do you put your trust? And you're not prompted to say anything. And I said, God. Okay, and he says, your trust being in God, your faith is well-founded, arise, follow your conductor, and fear no danger. Now, this is the problem. If that man confesses a faith in a deity, in a false god, in the great thumb, in Brahma, in Vishnu, in Shiva, in whoever, the worshipful master of the Masonic Lodge is required to tell him, your trust is in God, your faith is well-founded. Mm. If that man rejects Jesus Christ, Masons tell him his trust is in God. And so, in other words, Freemasonry lies to that man, lies to him. Because it doesn't matter if you confess Christ. That's the deception here, Bill.
Okay.
If I confess Jesus Christ, okay, fine. But if I say I reject Christ and I worship another god, you're told your trust is still in God. That's the conflict. And so here's where the popes have said that Freemasonry's rituals are contrary not just to revelation but to reason itself. Because if you have two Masons in that situation and one professes a belief in the Trinity and the other one rejects the Trinity, Masonry tells both of them that their trust is in God, which is contrary to reason. It's contrary to the principle of non-contradiction. You can't be and not be at the same time, you see? So this is where the popes have said it's not just contrary to God's revelation, it's contrary to reason itself.
This is amazing testimony and very surprising, I would imagine, to a lot of our listeners and a lot of the people here listening to this. And I want to ask you about after that initiation. How did you feel? How were you received? What was your family? Because you said your family was waiting for you out in the area, right?
We had older friends and some relatives. That's
okay.
Right. Yes.
So was there a celebration after that? Was there what happened after?
You're almost waiting during the ritual, Bill, for somebody to crack a joke or something like this. And that's what is so amazing. This is one of the most solemn things you can see. And I'm using that term not in a religious sense, but it's a very solemn ceremony. I didn't get to the part where you're escorted to the altar. Okay, in the lodge room, there is an altar in the center of every lodge room. And it's there where the Mason is required to swear his oath. Okay, it's Masonic oath. And it's that oath where the ritual says makes a man a Mason. Because when he swears the oath, essentially swearing to give his life to Freemasonry, he seals the oath with a blood curse on himself. And what he says in the Entered Apprentice degree is he says, I'm worthy to have my throat cut across, my tongue torn out by its roots, and buried in the rough sands of the sea on low watermark, where the tide ebbs and flows twice in 24 hours, etc., etc. All the other rituals are the same. Now, you're swearing this oath on the Holy Scriptures. Because I told him I was a Catholic, when I swore my oath, they had the sacred Bible. They had the Old and New Testament. It was a King James Version. It wasn't a Catholic book. I noticed that. But it was still a Bible. Now, if it would be a Muslim, they'd have the Quran. Mm. It would be a Book of Mormon. It'd be, you know, Mormon, etc. But it's at that point where you asked, you know, what did you feel? What did you see? What happened afterwards? It's that point after you swear the blood oath that your blindfold is taken off. And now you're looking around and it's dark and there's candles lit and you see all the brethren in a line staring at you. They're all dressed in tuxedos and white gloves and it's very solemn and nobody's laughing. And then you're instructed further into the rituals of Freemasonry and the concepts and the doctrines and the practices and so forth. After it's all said and done, you're warmly received, you go out for a drink, and they talk about how great Masonry is and how you're now part of a brotherhood that's going to take care of you, and you're going to take care of them.
Wow. Just incredible. Well, do we have any questions from the studio audience that is here?
My question is this. You have been gone through this long oath. Now, it's about 12 or 13 paragraphs, something like that, small paragraphs. It isn't until you get to the end that you have this blood-curdling part. Right. Are you really saying it? Or are you being led through it? Or are you just kind of like reciting words at that point? Am I correct in understanding that?
Yes, brother, you are correct. And this is why this is different than some of the pledges that, for example, a Catholic would take in the Knights of Columbus. In the Knights of Columbus, which I also went through, you read the pledge in advance. That's the first distinction. The second distinction is, in the Pledge of the Knights of Columbus and other types of social organizations, you're not called, you don't call upon God to witness the promise. That's what makes it an oath. In Freemasonry, you are not told what you are going to recite in advance. You are told, in that very vulnerable position of being blindfolded and naked and a noose around your neck, you will repeat after the worshipful master. Okay, so you simply repeat. And then you're required to call upon God to witness the oath, which makes it an oath. And that just makes it all the more sacrilegious. So that's the distinction.
My question to you is this. Is it a financial gain, or is it like a spiritual gain or a business gain by becoming a Mason? What's the purpose in becoming one?
Well, for me, it was business and social. Certainly had nothing to do with religion. I already had my religion. And I would think almost every man that approaches Freemasonry, it's not for religious reasons, although ultimately the effect of it is it draws a man away from his own religion. That's the practical effect that it has. But the pretext is business and social relationships. So look at all the judges that are Freemasons. Look at your fellow attorneys, doctors, businessmen, etc. They will give priority to their brethren. Whether you need somebody to fix your car or to mow your lawn or to hear your case, if they're a Freemason, in one of the elements of those oaths is that you swear to be partial to your brother Masons. You swear to be partial to your brother Masons, and that's where the benefits are supposed to come from.
John, just to kind of follow up on that, what is the influence in the law enforcement and the political culture with an oath like that? What happens when they go sit on a judge's seat or in a political setting where we've elected officials to be non-partial, but now you've got this oath?
Well, it creates a conflict of interest because on the one hand, you've sworn to be a partial arbiter in matters legal, for example, as a judge, and on the other hand, you've sworn an oath in the Masonic Lodge to be partial to your brethren. Okay, so if in fact you're presented a case where you believe the evidence weighs in favor of the non-Mason, I have a conflict there because I've already sworn in advance that I'm going to be partial to my brother Mason. That poses a problem.
What happens then? Is there corruption in the system because of Freemasonry? Is that, can we safely assume that?
Well, I think we can. It would require more investigation to actually prove specific facts of certain cases. But, of course, because they've sworn these blood oaths with self-curses, unless people think that those oaths are a joke, in which case they've committed a mortal sin because you're not supposed to call upon God's name to witness a joke, okay? So unless they think those oaths are a joke, then they're going to take those oaths seriously. And you see the internal conflict that one has. I'm either going to disregard the oath, in which case I'm holding it as trivial and I've committed a sin for swearing it in the first place, or I'm going to uphold the oath, but in which case could present a conflict because I'm not actually doing the right thing in real life.
Earlier, John, you in the recruitment and the manner in which you recruited, you helped clarify something that I've always often puzzled about. Why is it so difficult to get Knights of Columbus groups to disassociate themselves from joint fundraising and charitable works with the Masons? And the fact that you speak about recruiting, there are probably some Knights of Columbus members who are also Freemasons, and therefore they will resist breaking this, I would call it, an unnatural bond.
Mm-hmm.
Your comments, please.
You're absolutely right, brother. The fact of the matter is, while I was in Freemasonry, and right after I left Freemasonry, I should say, and joined the Knights of Columbus, the master of the lodge that I went to was also the counsel for the Knights. He was head of both at the time. I went into the Knights specifically because I knew Father McGivney's objective was to draw men out of Freemasonry to present a social and fraternal setting for Catholic men who shouldn't be in the Masons. I found a very oppressive spirit unfortunately. I was not allowed to talk about the Freemasons, and the reality is there are many high-ranking Masons in the Knights of Columbus at the very top. That's a reality. That is why the Knights of Columbus and the Freemasons gather together very formally, socially. They do it right in here in Milwaukee. The Shriners get together with the Scottish Rite. They have what they call All Faiths Night. That's exactly what they call the meeting down here in Milwaukee. They call it All Faiths Night, with the Scottish Rite or the Shriners get together with the Freemasons at the Scottish Rite. They pray, they dine together, they have fraternal communion, and they act like they're part of the same fraternity.
Can I follow up on that? My own experience has been, on a few occasions I found clear evidence that someone was, from the newspapers, was in the Knights of Columbus and the Masons. And I have reported them to the national headquarters. They will contact his council and tell him he must choose one or the other. And they do enforce that. Mm. But it seems like they seem to have no ability to break these fundraising bonds and other joint ventures on the national level. They don't seem to know what to do.
Well, since we're on that topic, I'll tell you a true story very quickly. The Knights of Columbus approached me after I left Freemasonry to write for the Veritas series about Freemasons, to expose Freemasonry. That's fantastic, because that's one of the things I think the Knights should do. And so I did that. I wrote a pamphlet on Freemasonry. The Knights of Columbus were so pleased with the pamphlet that they actually gratuitously increased my stipend, and they sent it off to Bishop William Laurie in the Diocese of Bridgeport for his imprimatur. So I have an imprimatur from Bishop Laurie, Knights of Columbus. That pamphlet was published and was sent to various Catholic media outlets, including EWTN. One of the interviews that you saw that I did with John at Bank of It, that pamphlet was on the set right next to me. Right before I got to EWTN, they received a call from the Knights of Columbus saying to destroy the pamphlet, to destroy it completely. We do not want it out there. Now, why would that be? As a lawyer, I kept all the rights to that book, and eventually that pamphlet became this book, Why Catholics Cannot Be Masons. So this book was originally written for the Knights of Columbus, for their Veritas series, okay, which received the bishop's imprimatur, and the Knights of Columbus, somebody higher up than the Veritas series, ordered that this be destroyed. EWTN was summoned to turn that book in, to give it back to them, the original, to not make any copies, and this happened in other resources, and I went ahead to Tan Books and published it. So that tells me there's something wrong in that organization.
Just incredible, John. This has been so much fun and inspirational, but not only inspirational, just informative about your journey through the Masons, and certainly enlightening ourselves here and all the listeners we have on WSFI Spotlight. I want to give you the opportunity just to maybe close with some final thoughts here as we wrap up this episode.
Well, hopefully those who are hearing us and have questions about Freemasonry, there's so much information on. I have on my website a tab where I have devoted scores of articles, videos, audio information on Freemasonry. I have published all of the rituals on Freemasonry on my website, so you can read what's there. The rituals are universal. All the rituals that I have there are recognized throughout the United States as universal Freemasonry. And it was a laborious task because the rituals are in the ciphered format. They're not in English, so it took a while for me to do that. So all the information is there. If we would just listen to the popes, listen to the church, listen to those who've gone through this, the information is there to make the right decision. And once people look at what the church says and what this information says, they'll realize it is impossible for a Catholic to be a Mason.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being here, John.
Thank you, Bill.
This has been an episode of WSFI Spotlight. Until next time, from all of us here at WSFI Catholic Radio, thank you so much for listening. God bless. I'm Bill Snyder.
This has been WSFI Spotlight. For more information on this or any other program, email info@wsfiradio.org.
This is Father Mitch Paqua from EWTN Radio in Irondale, Alabama. It is such a great way to learn more about the faith by listening to WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio. You can join us for information about what's going on in Catholic news, ways to understand the faith better, and ways to become evangelists yourself. So please continue to listen to WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio.
WSFI is committed to bringing quality Catholic programs to our local community, but we only can do that with your financial help. Please take a moment now to donate online at wsfiradio.org. or mail your tax-deductible donation to WSFI Catholic Radio, P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois, 60048. That's P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois, 60048. Donations of any amount are greatly appreciated.